Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Jacob, how are you doing?
I mean, I'm mostly here today. I got the COVID booster, I got that in my left arm and I got a flu shot in my right arm. So, I was actually pretty loopy this afternoon.
Nice.
I had to ride to really pass the fuck out.
Good shit.
But yeah, I'm here. So, you know,
you're here. Aki is not here.
So you fucks have to deal with me for much longer.
Yeah. Aki is not here. She, ran into some issues with peanut butter. She'll be here later on in the show to handle her review. But, for now, Glenn Case is here. Glenn, how are you doing?
I'm well. You know, instead of getting the COVID booster shot, I just got COVID. So,
yay.
I'm over it now. That's not even a joke. I really did. I actually really did get it, even despite being vaccinated.
That sucks. Like, do you know how?
Well, it's pretty safe to say my wife had a completely unrelated medical emergency that made us need to go to the emergency room, and there was a 6-hour wait to get into the ER. And there were people that were coming in who clearly had COVID that were being sent over. So we're pretty sure she got it from there, and then I got it from her.
Gotcha.
No, you were vaccinated, so it wasn't that bad, right?
Exactly. I had two shots of the Pfizer. About the worst that it got for me was 100-degree fever and a terrible cough. And at this point, it's more, my head is more cloudy than usual. And it feels like I am lethargic and out of energy a lot, but I could say that that was how I was before COVID too. So who knows
if that's just related. That's just life right now.
Yeah, it could be. Could be.
Life is lethargic.
It's true. Yeah, I will still get the booster when the opportunity presents itself. But my understanding, at least, is after getting it, it's like a booster. So who knows?
I am scheduled to get my booster sometime in December, I think. I know I have it scheduled sometime before MAGFest.
Nice. So you're going to do the MAGFest thing this year?
I have. It's fucking MAGFest. I've been to every one. I can't miss one.
That's fair.
So I hope it's not that crowded.
There you go.
Although I have a feeling I'm going to be spending a lot of time in my room doing nothing.
See, or you could just play Rock Band, you know.
True.
I don't know. Yeah.
I'll bring my own setup in my room because I don't want to touch instruments that other people have been handling.
Yeah, that's a solid point, I suppose.
That's a nice way of saying of, like, you know, you're only going to touch so many penises when you're in the hotel.
I have limits, Jacob. No, not my own. Come on, it's MAGFest. Got a party.
So there's that.
Party like a rock star. Oh, man. So how was your week? How's everything going with you two?
I work at the very beginning of the week, so like from Sunday to Wednesday. So, I mean, I finally have a day off and I had to spend it getting shots in the arm. So, it's okay, I guess. I don't know.
Just okay.
In my case, I started playing Forza Horizon 5.
So there we go. That's what we're talking about. That's the kind of juicy content we're looking for on the show. Forza, how are you enjoying it so far?
Oh, it's so great. And honestly, I've now played a little bit of it on the Series X. I've played a little bit of it on the Xbox One X. And you can tell the difference when you're playing it on the one versus the other. Because the One X, it looks just like Forza Horizon 4. And on the Series X, it is like a whole new level of crazy. It's just gorgeous, smooth, a lot of fun.
Yeah, I remember Carnage and I watching you play, and you were playing on the, what was it, on quality mode. Quality. Right?
I was on quality mode, and then you guys were in the chat and said, play it on performance mode.
Yeah.
And boy, you were right.
It defaults to quality mode, so you get like the really pretty look, but once you throw it on performance and you get those frames, the 60 frames per second,
Yeah, it's no phenomenal. Yeah, and last night, it wasn't on the stream, but I had my wife come down and do what we call going rogue, which is she doesn't really do any races or anything. She just gallivants down the countryside and plows into all of the trees and everything that she can plow through. Just goes nuts. And that's it's a blast to watch. She ended up finding train tracks. She went on the train tracks. She hit the train, and she said, I won.
How did she, did the train get derailed?
No. The train just, takes your car and, you definitely fly away and the train's undisturbed.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It is. It's something to behold. I'm hoping that I can get her to go rogue on my channel here in the not too distant future.
Carnage saying Forza Horizon 5 spoiled him. He played the GTA trilogy and the frame rate bothered him. Oh. I didn't play the new releases yet. I picked them up. I'm hoping to get some time with them this weekend, at least with Grand Theft Auto 3, because I loved that one. That's one of the reasons I bought a PS2 back in the day.
Oh, certainly. I think a lot of people would agree with that. I've seen screenshots, and I've wondered if the screenshots were a joke on a couple of the things that I've seen, because it almost looks worse than the PS2 in certain regards.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's just something where people were making a joke and screwing with the image or not, but if the images were genuine, wow.
Yeah, some of the textures, Carnage saying some of the textures are a bit weird. They look kind of plasticky.
Yeah. And apparently they had to remove a bunch of the songs, which makes sense because you have
licensing.
I'm sure the licensing gets in the way of that, yeah.
Yeah, it sucks that they have to I wish they wouldn't call them like definitive if they're removing shit.
Yeah, it's not definitive at that point.
Yeah.
It's the almost as good.
Almost. The decently all right trilogy. So let's talk about some news. You guys want to talk about news?
Oh, why not?
It looks like the talk and the rumblings of more backward compatibility titles is gaining a little bit more credence, as there were another batch of titles that showed up on the store that are not currently backward compatible that just recently popped up. Dead or Alive showed up. Manhunt.
Hell yeah.
Max Payne 1 and 2. Oddworld Munch's Odyssey, Red Dead Revolver, Star Wars The Clone Wars, Star Wars Episode 3, and Thrillville.
Huh. That's some pretty good ones. Now have they announced Rocket Bowl as one of them? Because I'm imagining not yet. Oh, that's unfortunate.
No, I really hope that this isn't just like a dump of games and that's it. I hope this is the rebirth of the program so that maybe we will see Rocket Bowl.
That would be pretty cool. For those who don't know, it's it's a bowling ball with rockets.
Early 360 game, right?
Yeah. It's actually pretty solid and fun. It's a twist on the classic take of bowling, because the lanes themselves, it's more like a park, I guess you could say, and you're pointing towards the bowling pins that you want to hit, but you can choose to veer off and hit pins from a different frame. and it curves around corners and stuff. Yeah, it's a little wild, but in a good way.
I haven't played that game in so long, but I love the fact that you brought it up.
Well, it's a classic favorite of mine, and I'm like, why is Rocket Bowl not in my game choices here? What's going on, guys? Is it that difficult?
These are just original Xbox games that they're mentioning. There's only been, I think, two 360 games that have shown up in these leaks so far, so I don't know.
First Templar and Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Yeah, which, I mean, that's the world ender right there. That's the final boss of backward compatibility releases when you talk about what the public demands. It's Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
You know they're clamoring for that one, that's for sure.
I'm not gonna lie, I mean, the fact that Clone Wars and Episode 3 are showing up, I mean, it kind of makes sense to me, because I mean, they've already made pretty much every single other original Xbox Star Wars game available. Mm-hmm. So like the fact that those two weren't I think that's a good sign. Plus, I mean, episode 3, that game, crap. It's not 20 years old, but it's getting close to being like the 20th anniversary of that game. So,
yay, we're old.
Jesus. Yeah, holy shit. Why did I say that sentence? I suddenly just felt very, really fucking old. I don't know. I missed it when it came out, because I remember it got, like, middling reviews, but now, like, I keep seeing these posts on Twitter about, like, how LucasArts back in 2005 released. They released that, Battlefront 2, crap, there were, like, two other Star Wars, Republic Commando, and I'm missing one other game. I forget what, but it was just like they released all four games within like a 1 year period, and everyone's just like, holy shit, like imagine getting all these titles out of like a AAA studio, you know, in 1 year. Nowadays we're like lucky to get like four titles in a series in 5 years, if
and they, I will they say were if just you guys shitting out the games back then.
I will say, if you guys feel old, imagine in my case, I was on a waiting list for Pac-Man on the Atari 2600 because it wasn't out yet.
Wow. Huh. Do you regret that?
You know, ultimately, what I remember about Pac-Man on the Atari 2600 is at the time we didn't expect the games to look as good as they did in the arcades, because they're, you know, that really wasn't how it worked. It was just the fact that you could play Pac-Man at home in any capacity.
True.
Was kind of cool. It was just kind of cool. So it's like, you know, yeah, this isn't like the arcade, but hey, it's Pac-Man. You know, you take what you can get. In retrospect, yeah it's awful. In retrospect. In fact, I got to meet the guy, Todd Fry, who programmed that game. I met him at Portland Retro Gaming Expo. I told him that factoid that I was on the waiting list, and he apologized to me. But I told him the same thing. It's like, at the time, you know, it's just, you're able to play Pac-Man at home now. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then this Pac-Man was way better.
I always find like those kind of stories interesting, because you know, it's like, it's easy for us for like 20 years later to be like, oh my god, that game sucked, or like this movie sucked. But I used to be in a Star Wars group on LiveJournal, which, you know, if we're just gonna age ourselves on shit, you know. And I had just seen the Star Wars Holiday Special, like obviously through a bootleg from a friend, and like I remember asking everybody in there, because there were some people who were kids at the time when Star Wars came out, and I was just like, well, what did you guys think of this thing? I mean, like, this thing's an absolute piece of shit. Like, were you not aware that like this was absolute drivel? And everyone was just like, listen, it was 1979. You know how desperate we were for any new Star Wars content? We didn't give a shit. Like, it's just, yeah, it sucked. But you know what? We just got to see Han, Luke. We just got this brand new guy named Boba Fett revealed. Like, it was awesome for us. I don't know.
Now, the first one I remember even looking like the arcade was the ColecoVision version of Donkey Kong. Was like, oh my god, this actually looks like the arcade.
Oh yeah.
And when you compare the screens now, it's not that close, but it was so much closer than what we were used to. And then Super Mario Brothers, the arcade, and that looked perfectly exactly the same.
ColecoVision was pretty solid for its time.
For its time, absolutely.
That's good shit. I love ColecoVision.
Yeah. No, I believe you were the one to tell me Venture was the one I needed to play on that.
Yeah, buddy. I still have a Venture cart. That's the only ColecoVision cartridge I own, but it's sitting on my shelf right over there.
Nice. Love Very it. Nice.
Love Venture. If you haven't played that, kids, look it up. It'll make you feel old. the PS5 has been cracked. Have you guys heard
this?
Has
it?
What?
I had not heard this.
The group Fail Overflow has cracked the PS5 just 1 year after release. I don't know all the specifics, because I tried reading it and it's like a different language to me.
Yes.
So
what have they been able to do on it? What that makes it worth? Like, they're basically saying like it's jailbroken and you can just like run stuff on it. That's
there. You know, they got access to like the root level components or whatever. Like they're in the system. I guess they're in the matrix. They've gotten inside. They're able to dick around. Playing backups might be a possibility. Obviously, you'll have to keep your system offline, and that kind of ruins the point of having one of these new consoles.
Yes.
So,
well, it'll be interesting to see where it is in a year or two. It's always like one of those things where you hear that that sort of news has happened and it's like, yay, that's cool. Let's see where it's at in a year or two.
Makes you wonder what they do with homebrew. Like, are we going to see emulators on there?
Yeah, I'd say that that's a given. As soon as they've jailbroken / cracked something, you know, it's probably only just a matter of time before at least you'll have the homebrew stuff.
Because RetroArch runs on a Series X. I mean, they have that in dev mode, and I think there were public builds of it that were released temporarily. But like the Xbox Series X runs PS1 games pretty well.
Wow, I believe
from what people are saying. I haven't dabbled in that stuff myself in years. I haven't messed with emulation. I should dick with it again someday.
It's funny. The one that they say that's really difficult to emulate is the Sega Saturn, of all things. Yeah. I have this device that I ended up getting, a RetroPie that I ended up getting that had all of the stuff, but the Saturn stuff was missing. But it did Dreamcast, but it couldn't do Saturn. Go figure.
Yeah, I remember they were saying the Dreamcast was going to be so hard to crack, and the new discs were going to be so complex. And like a year later, they're like, yeah, you could just boot them off CDs. We got it. We're good.
Yep, exactly. It's crazy what they're able to do. But to me, I think the crazy part of that story is that they found a PS5.
Yeah. In the past year, they found one PS5.
Yeah, at the very least. And you would almost think it means that they probably found two, because you'd have the one that you use for your regular use and the one that you decided to use for cracking.
That's not talk crazy. I mean, finding two?
Yeah, I know. It seems pretty, you know, pretty crazy. But if they're hacking the one, I imagine they're not going to hack their main one that they would use for regular gameplay.
You never know.
Yeah.
You never know. It's insane how these consoles are still so hard to find after a fucking year.
Well, I feel like if people can buy it and sell it at a profit, then you're always going to have the people that are going to ruin the fun for everybody and do that.
Yeah.
Like, I only got a Series X because I ended up doing the month-to-month thing where...
the all-access?
Yeah, that's the only reason I was able to get my hands on a Series X.
There you go, Jacob.
What?
All access. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, I know. Finances got to line up, though.
True. Very true. Forza Horizon 5, we were talking about that. Some news. It had over 1 million players before the actual game launch on Tuesday. And then on day one, there were over 4.5 million players total.
Wow, that sounds about right, too. And apparently all of them are buying Jeeps. Have you read about that?
No.
So the idea is that there's this inexpensive, like, 1940s Jeep that you can buy, and then you can end up, one of your things you can unlock is a super wheel spin, and then you can sell it or get rid of it, and then it buy another one and get another super wheel spin.
Oh, man.
And it's like a thing where people caught on to this, and they were able to get just all kinds of prizes and money for next to nothing, because buying one of the Jeeps is something like $30,000-$40,000 is all it costs. Geez.
Yeah, but then you have to actually earn the skill points, so it's not like free money.
Yeah, but it's still pretty cheap money.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I gotta find out what Jeep this is.
Yeah, I'll send you the story. My buddy Fenn that works for Nintendo sent that my way, which is funny because obviously this is a non-Nintendo product, but yeah. Hi, Fenn.
Yeah, but Reggie had an Xbox in his office. So
there you go.
Yeah, all the companies seem to support each other anymore, which is cool. Except Sony. They're just like, we don't like you.
It's a Kotaku article. I have sent it your way.
Sweet. I will be reading that later.
It's full of Jeeps, basically. Forza Horizon 5 is now full of Jeeps after the fans find this exploit.
Oh, God. That's crazy. Friggin' Jeeps. Fun. I got the Mercedes AMG one on like one of my first wheel spins, and that's all I've been using.
Well, rightfully so, if that's the one you get, sure.
I was so excited when I got that, and then I saved up my points, and I got the extra life perk, so I could take a hit during combos.
Well, and as you saw, you told me where the airplane, not the airplane hangar, but the runway is, that where you try to get the mega jump off of.
Oh,
that.
Yeah.
and it's a really fun spot. And I was excited because I finally got my 3-star, and then you sent me a video of someone using a vehicle that goes over 300 miles per hour that made my jump look pretty tiny in comparison.
3,500 feet, the video was.
Ridiculous. Already, this game's been out such a short period of time, and people are already, yeah.
I know. On its opening week, people found ways to just break the game. It's insane. I love it.
It's pretty great.
Literally, like, they go off the jump. They're so high in the air that the ground is popping out and disappearing. The game is glitching out because it can't handle how fucking high and far this car is going.
See, and this is new to me because I'm a big fan of the Forza Horizon series, but I was a latecomer to it, and this is the first new game that I have the ability to play it while it's brand new, like within its first couple of weeks. That's never been the case for any of the other ones, because I came to the bandwagon very late.
Well, you're here now, so that's good.
I am. Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'll be playing that as often as possible.
Oh, man, I am looking forward to Fable. The lead engineer at Playground Games has said Fable's been in development for at least 4 years already.
See, that's both good and bad. Like, if it takes too long, you know, which system were they developing this with the Series X in mind? That's what I end up wondering, if it's been in development for 4 years. Or is this something where it started on the Xbox One and they've kind of got to go, oh, the new system's out, so we've got to, you know,
I'm guessing that's how it went. I'm guessing that, and I mean, it seems system-wise that the Series X is so close to the Xbox One that it might not make that much of a difference development-wise.
That's good if so, yeah, because, I mean, it seems like a completely unrelated thing, but I think back to one of the Mario Party titles that was like that, where it was clear that they were developing it on the GameCube, but then they pushed it out on the Wii.
Mm.
It was 8. And the reason you could tell was, like, the menu is in widescreen, then the game starts, and there's bars on the side. Like, this is clearly like, oh, yeah, this wasn't developed for the Wii at all. This was developed for the GameCube, and they threw it onto the Wii, and the only thing that's in widescreen is just the menus, and everything else is not.
That's hilarious. I didn't know about
that. Yeah, that was something where I'm like, yeah, I rented it. I'm like, yeah, I'm not buying this.
Something that you shouldn't buy right now is Jump Force, because Jump Force and all the DLC is set to be delisted on February 7th, and the online servers are shutting down in August.
Is it online only?
No, it's not. I mean, you could still play the game.
Yeah, I guess you could.
The thing is that not all of the online functions are going away, but however, Bandai's really hasn't made it clear. And so a lot of people think it's just going to be PvP that's still going to be around.
But if you can get it for a good enough sale, this might be the exact time to buy it, because
I was going to say, yeah, next time it goes on sale, I'm definitely buying it.
Yeah, that's the buy opportunity to ever buy it again is, yeah.
Yeah, wait for a sale. Don't buy it right now. Wait for a sale. Get a cheat.
You know it.
It's like, screw you, Joe. I'm going to buy it.
Good. Fucking do it.
Good.
Fucking do it.
Good. I will.
You know what I'm going to buy? I'm going to buy Elix 2 on March 1st, because that finally got a release date.
Huh.
Yeah. So if you like the first Elix, or Elix, however you say it, second one comes out March 1st. There's also a collector's edition with a 9-inch statue, an art book, a keychain, and a steel book for $150. I might have to look into that. I have the first collector's edition statue, so I feel like I have to get the second one, too.
I'm just like, of course, consumer whore Joe is going to get the, you know, the statue and steelbook. Of course. Yeah,
buddy.
Goes without saying.
Yeah, buddy. Last bit of news I have is there was a Thunderful World event, kind of like a Nintendo Direct event. They showed off a handful of new titles. Wavetail launched on Stadia. Surprise launch. And it's on Stadia, so that's the biggest surprise, I guess. Console and PC is coming next year. There's a game called Planet of Lana, which is going to be an Xbox and PC exclusive. Let's see, Industria, Curse to Golf looked cool. Curse to Golf was like a 2D golf game with power-ups.
That sounds fun.
That's set to launch console and PC in 2022. They had a sizzle reel with a bunch of new titles. The big news coming out is that they finally announced a release date for The Gunk,
Huh.
Yes. I've
never heard of The Gunk. What is that?
The Gunk is a new game from the SteamWorld developers.
Okay.
Like SteamWorld Heist, SteamWorld Dig.
Yeah. No, I've
That's
heard of
their new game,
them, but I've heard of them.
Yeah, it's coming out December 16th. It is going to be Xbox Series X and S and Windows exclusive, and obviously Game Pass.
Very nice. Yeah, I'm looking at things about it right now. That actually does look pretty fun.
Yeah, so that's the news I got. Jacob, what do you have?
So it looks like Fight Night is coming back. EA has supposedly greenlit a new game in the series. So
that's good.
If you like boxing games and...
Isn't it held up, though, like they greenlit it, but it's on hold anyway?
I only read that they greenlit it. But it's early in development.
Mm.
So. I imagine that's the Electronic Arts Fight Night and not the Fight Night from 1985 made by Accolade.
You never
Good
know.
Guess.
They might be making a comeback.
It's possible. It's a boxing game as well, though. So there
Accolade's
you go.
Back.
They were the original makers of Test Drive, so, you know.
Oh, man. I miss Test Drive. I spent so much of my childhood playing the dual Test Drive 2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good stuff. At the time, it was, again, just... like, wow, this is so cool for the time.
I was the first person in my family to make it past the first level, and eventually I could beat the game without crashing once, but it always drove my dad nuts how I would drive like right in between cars. Oh man,
thread the needle.
He would just get so damn nervous just watching me play that game.
Exactly like Joe was saying too, thread the needle. That's exactly it.
Did you get bonus points for that shit back then?
Nah. I mean, you ran away from the cops, so, you know, that's always good.
Your bonus was not dying.
Yeah, I mean, and if anything, like, I spent more, like, I ended up spending a lot of time just trying to figure out how, like, the game worked and, just test the limits of the cars and stuff like that. Like, you know, oh, let's see what happens if I try driving towards the mountain, which eventually you do crash into the mountain. But then also, like, what happens if I drive, like, 5 miles per hour? Which, by the way, the cops will pull you over and write you a ticket for driving too slow.
Really?
Like, I'm not kidding. Like, I really, like, tried testing, like, to see, like, what you could do in this game. And I found out it was all built on HyperCard, which I was just like, holy shit. Like, I used to have that on my Mac back in the day, and it was just like, I just remember it being like a simple thing that my brother would try building like choose your own adventure games on. And it turns out like there's this full blown fucking driving game. Yeah, we just build it in HyperCard. Like what? Like so yeah. Oh man, I missed that game. Okay, news. Did we talk about the Metal Gear Solid games?
No, but what was it? 2 and 3 are getting delisted temporarily, quote.
Metal Gear Solid 2 and Metal Gear Solid 3, like the HD collections, are being removed from multiple storefronts, along with Metal Gear Solid 2, Sons of Liberty for PS3 and PS Vita, Metal Gear Solid 3, PS3 and PS Vita, the Solid Collection on PS3, Solid HD Collection on PS Vita and PS Now. We already talked about the Xbox titles, Snake Eater 3D on Nintendo 3DS, Metal Gear Solid 2 Substance on GOG, and then Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3 HD for Shield TV on NVIDIA Shield.
I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck that is. Is that like them trying to have their own like Epic Game Store or something?
I don't fucking know.
Now, and wasn't okay. This like a licensing issue as well?
So it's historical footage that's shown through the game, but yeah, it's licensed footage, and like the games are like what, like 20 years old, and I guess like Konami forgot that the games existed and like they had licensed shit out for it. So like literally, like I think it was like actually like on one of the game's 20th anniversary, they had to announce that, oh yeah, by the way, we got to pull this shit. Now I don't know if they're still available, or if it's like a slow removal. But like the day that they announced it, the games were still up on Xbox, available for sale like 8 hours later. And so I ended up picking it up for $20 just because. You know, fuck it. Who knows what's going to happen? Well, I mean, there's a very real chance, because, I mean, Konami's just like, oh, it's just temporary.
There's a chance they won't do anything.
Yeah, or as some people pointed out, like, you know, now is like a prime time for them to, you know, release like a collection Xbox Series X or something like that. And so it's just like they get rid of it on all the old storefronts where it's not making any money, and then they just release a new collection.
Yeah, that seems very likely, or it'll be like where it's a PT, where they just remove it altogether.
No.
Yeah. So I bought it. It's downloaded on my Xbox One, so hooray.
Yeah, I think I take a similar approach to you on that, Jacob. That's how I...
Oh,
how
just, I like as soon as something's announced getting delisted, you just go buy it immediately?
I bought all of the stuff for Pinball Arcade on both my Android and on my PC, because, like, even though it was ridiculous prices, it's like, I will not be able to buy the Addams Family pinball table again if I don't do this.
Yeah.
I remember when Joe was telling me, like, all that crap was going away, and I wish I'd had the money for it. But like, I remember talking to my wife, like, hey, by the way, you know, Joe just mentioned, she's like, how much does that cost? Oh, well, Joe's spending a minimum of like $300.
No, I didn't spend that much.
And she's like, fucking what?
I didn't spend that much. No,
Joe didn't spend $300. He spent $299 plus tax.
No, I think like $120 or something.
Yeah, you only spent like $100, but you had calculated how much it would cost for me to do it, because
yeah, to get all the packs, yeah.
Yeah, and it was above $300, but my wife was like, guess he's not playing any pinball games. let's see. So Sega has filed a trademark for the name Sonic Frontiers. So it's widely believed that it's going to be the next game title. They've also trademarked Sonic Frontier, Hero of Light and Darkness, and Shining Force.
Intriguing.
So,
see, that's the hard-hitting news I didn't get this week.
See, I mean, what else would you do without me?
Get to reviews quicker.
Shut up. I was trying to think of what sort of a game Frontiers could be, and the closest that I got was, like, there's an album by Journey called Frontiers, so it's a crossover with, like, 1980s Journey. There.
Sonic with, you know, 80s hair.
I'm not going to lie. Like, in my 20s, like, I honestly believed, like, Journey had sold their soul to the devil to, like, to make Don't Stop Believing, you know, as big of a hit as it was. Like, because I'm just like, I looked at their discography, and I'm just like, none of this is that good. Like, there's no reason why Journey should have been as big as it was. And I'm not going to lie. Like, the older I get, the more I'm like, yeah, man, Journey's great. Like, it's great dad rock. Blah, blah, blah. It's just like,
no, it's
not. I don't
know.
I hate how I get older and, like, I'm becoming more appreciative of certain musicians. Like, I now no longer hate Paul McCartney's guts on his stuff. I mean, I still hate that post 9/11 freedom song that he sang, which was,
yeah, that's not a good
shit.
One.
That was such shit. But I mean, a lot of post 9/11 music was absolute shit.
No, yeah,
but,
definitely.
But yeah, like his post Beatles, like 1970s and 80s stuff. I'm just like, yeah, man, like I'm rocking out to it on my fucking oldies station in my area, and I'm just like, why? 20-year-old Jacob is so disappointed in you. You know that man's the devil.
How the fuck are we talking about this? Like,
I blame me.
Where did we get? Where did we get to Paul McCartney?
You know,
I brought up Journey.
Yeah, right, true. Well, yeah, this is your fault, Glenn, you son of a...
We also talked about Test Drive 2.
Yeah, you know what? Purnell doesn't get the monopoly on tangents, okay?
He's had it for a long time.
I'm accidentally steering the show, so I should be quiet.
All right, so I got a... two other bits of news. Denuvo, which is a DRM system that's used for a bunch of games, including the recent Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, players were finding that it just absolutely wouldn't load because apparently they forgot to renew a URL that the security measure redirects the game to. And so players had to fix it themselves while the DRM company just kind of like shrugged and they're like, we'll figure it out.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yay for DRM.
Yay. I don't know if it's been fixed yet, but yeah. So, or wait. Nope. Players had to fix it themselves. Somebody renewed CodeFusion.technology domain, which will now expire on September 24th, 2022. So, unless somebody gets their shit together, this is all going to happen again next year.
Nice.
And the first season of The Last of Us TV show has finished wrapping. Or, sorry, has finished filming. They've wrapped up filming.
Gotcha.
Although, if they wanted to make a rap show, that would be cool. I mean, make it along the lines of Cop Rock.
No.
It's a really interesting take on The Last of Us.
Dropping bits!
Oh, Glenn, thank you for dropping bitties.
Yeah, well, no, I saw that you wanted bits.
Look at you. Thank you.
Yeah. No goal. I just want bits. So now you get bits.
100 bitties. Thank you so much. And George, thank you for announcing the bitties. Haven't heard that sound clip in a while. It's.
I mean, Joe wants bits. I want an Xbox Series X. Could we?
Good luck.
Get that dropped.
Dropping Xboxes. Dropping Xboxes all over.
At this point,
your
you just gotta
face.
Pass the credit check, I guess.
There you go,
one
Jacob.
Day, one day.
$35 a month.
I know, but with how our finances work, my wife doesn't get she's on like a 9-month contract despite working 12 months out of the year. So like she gets like a bigger paycheck and stuff like that.
Mm.
And it's just like if it weren't for the fact of how it's all set up, I probably would have an Xbox Series X, but I'm just like with how our finances work, like we have like a couple months where things like are a little lean and like we don't spend as much. And I'm just like, God help me if like that fucking $35 was the reason like why we ended up with a bunch of overdraft fees. So
nah,
That's totally fair. And honestly, it's not like you can't play most of these games at this point. We have not reached the point where the games that you can play are only available for the Series X. If you've got an Xbox,
yeah.
No.
At least you've still got a way to play it. It's just not as pretty. And it doesn't
Or fast.
They don't. And the thing is, I could deal with games not loading as fast, unlike Joe.
I can't.
Yeah. However,
I need my SSD
honestly,
speeds.
So far, I had managed to just be like, oh, well, you know, like the graphics won't, you know, be as much of a difference until one of the games we're about to review. So.
Does that mean we should get to reviews?
No, we need to talk about soda or some shit.
Okay.
Wrestling?
I am drinking Mountain Dew Courage Sherbert Game Fuel. It's delicious.
They still make Game Fuel?
Yeah. They sell it on their website.
Is it like Halo Infinite like related or?
No.
I finished a Mountain Dew Major Melon a little bit ago, but otherwise I'm just drinking water.
I love Major Melon. I love the melon.
Really good.
It's so good. Have you had the apple one?
No, but I saw that you ended up especially getting that, and they do not have it around here. I would have to special order it. And like, here's the thing. As I've gotten older, I love Mountain Dew, but Mountain Dew does not love me. And so I have to drink it sparingly.
If you're lucky, you could jump on the Kroger website and just order it directly from them.
From them, yeah. No, that's exactly, because they don't have any Krogers anywhere near here. So
yeah, I jumped on the website out of the blue the one day, and it was like, order for shipping. I was like, fuck yeah, 6 cases, here we go.
There you go.
I got 4 of them, the other 2 burst in shipping and were sent back.
Nice. Oh, quick little note on the load times, though. Bloodstained was one of them that I was playing a bunch, and I actually timed it. I think it was like 26 seconds for the game to load after you hit all the menu stuff. On the Series X, it's 6 seconds. So, yeah,
That's
it saves
insane.
You about 20 seconds just in, you know, 26 to 6, you know.
Even just playing Riders Republic, like, I haven't gone back and played too much on an Xbox One, but out of curiosity, I fired up Riders Republic on the Xbox One, and when you would fast travel, it would be like, I don't know, 4 or 5 seconds it would take for the map to load and to port you over, which doesn't sound that bad, but on the
but
Series
every time
X,
that
it's
you do
instant.
It. Yeah.
There
yeah,
is well, there's
the
zero loading on the series.
Every time you die, it had to reload, and it was that 26-second wait every single time versus 6. And that adds up. It's, I died a lot in the game, so...
It does.
Yeah.
All right, well, should we get to reviews, Jacob? Any other news, or...
No, that was all my stuff.
Cool. Well, Glenn, are you ready?
I think I'm about as ready as I'll get.
Cool, because we're going to start off with you. The first game to talk about tonight is called Mr. Driller Drillland, developed by Infinity Company, published by Bandai Namco Entertainment, released November 4th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, and PS5 for $29.99. The popular action puzzle game Mr. Driller Drillland makes its Western debut. You're invited to a secret amusement park known as Drillland, 500 meters underground. Explore and conquer five attractions with simple yet exciting gameplay that guests of all ages can enjoy. Glenn, tell us about your time with Mr. Driller Drillland.
Well, I do remember when I started playing this, I thought, this sounds familiar, so I'm going to go ahead and play through this. And when I started playing it, I'm realizing, oh, wait a minute, this is that game that is sometimes included in Namco Museum that I haven't spent that much time with because I felt like it was kind of boring by itself. And what I came to realize is like, wait a minute, this reminds me of three classic arcade games here. It reminds me of Boulder Dash. For those who don't remember with that, you've got boulders that, you know, you're digging through dirt and the boulders can crush you. You have Mr. Do, which is like where you're digging around and there's these things, again, that can crush you. And Dig Dug was the one that I thought. And I thought, I wonder if there's any connection between this game and Dig Dug, considering Namco makes both of them. Well, yeah. There's absolutely a connection because there's multiple characters in this one. And one of them, the old guy who is, I believe, 46 years old in this game, is Taizo Hori. It's the main character from Dig Dug.
I love it.
Yeah, I thought like, wow, there's actually lore involved in this because there's several different characters that you can play as. Different characters have different abilities. There's a robotic character that when you're playing as that character, it can that robot can withstand being hit twice. The first time it just knocks off his head, but you know the rest of him is able to still dig. And then the second time, then you lose a life. But I will say there are five different gameplay modes that are involved here. You do not get to choose which character on, I believe, four of them, like where you are stuck with the character that they choose for four out of five of those modes. But then there's the fifth mode, which is what they call Drillland World Tour, is just standard Mr. Driller gameplay. It plays like the regular ones. Now, bear in mind, you can dig down, you can dig to the left, you can dig to the right. You cannot move back up. So that's the big difference between this and like a Dig Dug situation, is that you can climb up one brick, but you can't go back up. The rest of it, you know, what you're doing is going to revolve around safely moving downward. So Drillland World Tour works just like the regular drill, Mr. Driller game. You have the Hole of Druaga, which is a parody of the Tower of Druaga. I especially enjoyed this specific mode because there's hit points involved and there are spells involved. And what the one thing that threw me, though, is I would get to the bottom of a stage and I couldn't go any further. And as I've stated, you can't go back up. So without having some sort of an instruction manual, I'm like, what do I do now? I'm stuck down here. Well, it turns out whenever you get to the bottom of an area that's a dead end, there is a gem that you can collect that allows you to warp. And then that's what you do, is you warp and you pick a different spot of the map. You have to find the key in one area, and then you have to find the lock in the other area. And then there's a boss fight and all of that. And it's pretty fun. There's the Horror Night House, where there you find holy water, and then the holy water, like it's crazy trying to read the instructions of what's going on. It doesn't make much sense at first, and especially since all of they didn't do English voiceovers. It's all in Japanese as far as the voice acting itself is all in Japanese, but there are captions on the screen.
That's good.
That are the English, you know, translations of what it is that they're saying. So there's already kind of a wild, crazy sort of thing, like you would imagine, like Katamari Damacy. Like if you think of how wild and out there that is, this has that sort of a vibe because of like the Japanese speech and the things happening in story mode are a little hard to believe, a little suspension of disbelief that you've got to do there. But of course, it's all just this fun, you know, lighthearted thing. But yeah, there's the Horror Night House where you have to get holy water, and then there's ghosts that are trying to get you, and then you end up getting rid of the ghost when you have holy water. There is Drindy Adventure, which is clearly meant to be like an Indiana Jones thing. So that especially plays into the boulders coming after you, and there's traps everywhere, spikes and that sort of thing. That's the one that ultimately kicked my anus. Because if you're doing bad at this, you start off where you only have three lives, but the more that you play it, you end up having in-game currency that you can use to have more lives, or have it to where you can be hit more often, or it makes it easier, right? You get past level one on all of these, and so then there's level two, which is the same thing you play, but it's more difficult. You have to dig down deeper. And then I got to level three on all of the modes except for the Drindy Adventure. I have unlocked every single thing that should make this easier, and it is still kicking my ass. It's fun, but it is not easy. But you know, that's part of the beauty of this sort of a thing too. And then there's Star Driller, I guess, is the one that I didn't mention, which is a space-based stage. You know, so there is some variety, but I'm just going to say, I don't know that there's $30 worth of variety here. If you're a big puzzle fan, you probably already own this. If you're a casual gamer, I do not know. I had a lot of fun with this, and I will probably still go back to it. But I question whether there's $30 worth of fun
here. Yeah, Mr. Driller always seems to work better as like a budget title. And $30 technically is a budget title, but I was thinking like $20.
Yeah. At $15, $20, it's a bargain. It's worth your time. And one of the other things that's kind of cool is that there is a local multiplayer. You can have up to four people on a split screen, and I don't see them doing that with a lot of modern games.
No.
If you have four people that can tolerate being in the same room and playing a puzzle game, and you know, COVID restrictions, you know, be damned. This is something where you can have four people playing and having some semblance of fun.
Yeah. Well, overall, the game is $30. If you had to give it a rating, what do you say?
This is my first one where I'm going to say try it. With the other part of it that I will say is, if you can get it on sale, buy it. Like $20, buy it.
Yeah.
At its current price, this is just a try it, because I think you'll have fun if you like the puzzle games. But you may not, you know, unless you're a fan of this sort of sit thing, you're not really getting $30 worth of value here.
No. All right. Well, that is it for you, Glenn. We will let you get going. Thank you so much for joining us and hanging out with us and keeping us company.
Absolutely. You are welcome. And apologies for all of the places that this episode went to where it probably would not have.
Yeah, it's
don't,
fine.
Don't apologize.
Never apologize for that.
He is never, he's not, you don't need to ever apologize to Joe for any of that kind of stuff. He's not worthy of it.
I'm not.
Okay. I'll bear that in mind.
Well, do you have any final words before we let you go, Glenn?
My final words are, give bits to the SML podcast. He says no goal. I just want bits. Give him bits.
Dropping bits. All right, Glenn, you have yourself a good night.
Thanks. You too.
See you, dude.
Have a good one.
All right. You ready to move on?
Look at Glenn, you know, like shilling for like the, you know, the show, like, you know, telling people to donate bits. And meanwhile, like my final words are usually like piss, shit, you yeah. know, fuck, stuff like that. Yeah.
That's because Glenn's a good person. You're not.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. Next game to talk about tonight is Call of Duty Vanguard, developed by Sledgehammer Games, published by Activision, released November 5th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $59.99, PS5 and Xbox Series X and S cross-gen bundles for $69.99. Rise on every front, dogfight over the Pacific, airdrop over France, defend Stalingrad with a sniper's precision, and blast through advancing forces of North Africa. The Call of Duty franchise returns with Call of Duty Vanguard, where players will be immersed in visceral World War II combat on an unprecedented global scale. Jacob, tell us about your time with Call of Duty Vanguard.
So it's been a while since I've gotten a regular Call of Duty game, and I was pretty excited to be back for this. I'm pretty much it was the kids that kind of killed this ability to play first person shooters as much as I used to.
Kids and they're young and
like, you know, either I had like midnight feedings, or, you know, my youngest, he hated anything like, you know, that was loud. So, you know, I couldn't play video games because he always wanted to be held. And on top of it, you know, I couldn't play Call of Duty. So I just ended up sitting there watching a bunch of documentaries. But with that, so first off, it's nice to return. Like, it felt so good getting into this game. And holy shit, it is a pretty game. Like, and this is just on the Xbox One. Before I even get into like the campaign and multiplayer and stuff like that, I just want to say this. The team who is in charge of the cinematics, there were a ton of times where, even though I was only playing on the Xbox One and not on a Series X, I was like constantly like looking at the screen and I was just like, am I looking at real people or is this like CGI? And like some scenes it was obvious like, yeah, this is CGI. But I swear to God, like there are cutscenes where you're just like, this looks like this was somebody filmed, and it's really eerie. That holy shit, it's gotten this good. So as I said, the game looks beautiful, like even on the Xbox One. That being said, so I mainly stuck with the campaign because, like, pretty much I'm old. I don't have time to put up with 12-year-olds telling me what they're going to do to my mom. You know, after I kill them in a multiplayer game,
you're not going to get kills. Let's be real. They're going to kill you.
And I got a few.
I don't believe you.
So anyway, so the single player campaign starts off with like, holy fucking shit. It starts off with this impossible, like Inglourious Bastard style mission, where you're trying to disrupt some trains and then make it over to a submarine launching bay to get some documents. And like, holy crap! Like that was a ton of fun. It then drops you onto D-Day, and so pretty much as the description for this game was going with. It pretty much drops you into various specific, like, you know, highlights of World War II. You know, it drops you into D-Day. It goes and I guess I really shouldn't ruin too much of it. But
yeah, don't go into the story too much.
Yeah, just know that it hits a lot of major beats. And I will say this, kudos for them for finally, like, because other than Blazing Angels, I'm not sure of any other World War II like fighter plane game or anything other than like World War II fighter plane games, anybody else trying to do the Battle of Midway. And Call of Duty Vanguard actually tries to do it. Kudos to them for trying, but it was an absolute pain in the ass to get this level. And one of the things that I really disliked was that it showed you how to do a bombing run once, and then it was just like, all right, well, guess what? You got to do it again. And it didn't tell you the controls. If you hit pause and look at the game controls, it's still only listing what the controls are if you're just like walking around with a gun.
Helpful.
So, yeah. So there was, I ended up dying on that mission a ton of times because I just ended up having to play with all the buttons, trying to figure out how to do a diving run again. But anyway, but also like maneuvering that plane was an absolute beast. I mean, we're playing a first person shooter game. It's not a flight sim. So it's one of those, like, keep it in mind. And thankfully the mission is not like, you know, any like major part of the game, but it was still like a holy shit. Like,
I love Wug is saying, for God's sakes, don't spoil who wins.
I don't know how to tell this to you, but
don't spoil it. He just said don't spoil it. So don't spoil who wins.
All right, fine. But I will just say the book was better than the movie.
The book is better.
So that being said, so the campaign tries going through, as I said, it goes through the major beats. Everyone in the campaign is a fictionalized character, which for me, this was a little bit jarring because I was used to like Call of Duty 1-3, where it was based on real events. They had interviewed World War II soldiers, you know, about what they'd gone through. And then they were trying to like recreate some of that. This very much feels like almost like a Hollywood movie at this point. And possibly even like as like a precursor to like modern warfare, because the task, I think it's called Task Force One that your team is. It's like, you know, you have one Russian, you have an American, you who is also a fighter pilot. You have an Australian dude who knows how to survive stuff. You have a black English guy, you know. And so you just have this like cast of characters who, I'm not going to lie, it's revisionist. I mean, obviously it's revisionist history or like alternative history. Sorry. I believe that's the term I'm supposed to use. Where it's just like, this is a team that would not have been assembled, in actual real life. And so if you're going for that, like level of realism that you found in like the way older, Call of Duty World War II games, not so much here. It definitely feels like this is, as I said, this is supposed to be like be more of like a precursor to like how the modern warfare games are set up. So take that, you know, if you're going for historical accuracy, you're not going to find it here.
And I don't think historical accuracy has been a goal of the Call of Duty games for quite a while.
Well, you know, for somebody who is jumping back in after like a 7-year hiatus, you know, I personally thought it was a bit, you know, odd.
No. Things have changed while you've been gone.
Yeah. You know, and some of it obviously for the better. I don't know. I had one gripe with the story, or one real gripe with the story. You run into the 93rd Infantry. And the only reason why I know anything about them is because my wife's archival work, some of these men would have been students at the university that she worked at, both during World War One and World War Two. And, you know, I was just like, oh, shit, this is cool. Like, you know, they're being represented in a video game. And essentially they're there. So the 93rd Infantry was an all black unit. Like they had some white commanders, but essentially all black unit, mostly sent out to the Pacific for World War Two. Let's not beat around the bush for racist reasons. Like white soldiers didn't want to have to back up these guys a lot of the time. And it's just like, and so they get representation in this game. And I was just like, oh shit, cool. Like, you know, we get to see them in action and like, you know, we get to fight alongside them. But for the storyline, it essentially felt like they were just there to teach a white guy a lesson about teamwork. And then they move on and like, we just never see them again. And it was just, I don't know.
Wasted opportunity.
It felt like it, like, you know, it was like, it almost felt like, all right, well, we got a check mark of like, you know, featuring like minorities in this game, but then it's like they weren't given anything. I mean, the scene was cool. Like it was, that whole level was hell. But I don't know. I wish it would have been more along the lines of like the older Call of Duty than just, it felt like they were thrown in there so they could say like, hey, we've got minorities in this game. You know what I mean? But anyway, so single player is not the smoothest experience, but I'm having fun with it. I'm not totally done with it yet, but you know, I'm still eager to see where it goes, and what happens with the Task Force One team. That being said, multiplayer for this game, oh my god, so much has changed since I last played. Last time I played Call of Duty multiplayer, I swear to god, on this was Call of Duty 3 on the Xbox 360, and I stopped playing because the opposing team knew where all the respawn points were for the other side. And so literally as soon as like we would respawn, we'd be dead like 1 second later. And I was just like, forget it, I'm done.
That's why I don't play online shooters.
Yeah, so with this, it's a lot of 6-on-6 squad-based stuff. And there are various levels. Like, there's jungle. There's one set up in, like, the back alleys of a city. There's the Eagle's Nest, you know, Hitler's impenetrable fortress. There is, like, one in, like, the Saharan Africa desert. I think it was called Desert Siege or something like that. There's one in a bombed out St. Petersburg. Like, there's one in the submarine pens one. Going back to the whole Midway thing, I wish that there had been one on top of, like, an aircraft character or, like, aircraft carrier or, like, inside of one. But if there is a level for it, I'd never encountered it. But the maps are varied. Like, they have, you know, it, as I said, they're varied. They feel right. Like, nothing ever felt like particularly like, oh, this is like a bad design. Some of them are close quarters more than I like. But everything, like, everyone seemed to be, you know, I didn't encounter too many dicks. So, like, and it's That's like good. The people that I was working with, you know, they were helpful. And especially when I explained, like, hey guys, I haven't done multiplayer since Call of Duty 3. And everyone was just like, oh, you're old as shit. that game was out back when I was in diapers. But everyone was generally helpful, and it's just, I had a decent time. I would even say I had a good time, getting back into online first person shooters. So if you're like me where you haven't dipped your toe into this kind of stuff, Call of Duty Vanguard, the multiplayer was a nice change of pace for me, and it felt right, and I'm glad that I've had a chance to get back into it. Now, I don't know if I'm going to go all gung-ho like some people and, like, wait around for, like, various seasons of this stuff. I don't know if Vanguard is going to have seasons of DLC for their multiplayer, but I hope that it has some longevity to it.
I'm sure it will. They seem to keep it going for at least a year until the new game comes out.
Yeah, I mean, it's guaranteed to at least do that.
No.
So
yeah. $60 on Call of Duty Vanguard, $70 for next gen or current gen, whatever you want to say. What do you think of this one?
So, overall, yes. Like, overall, buy it. It is an incredibly beautiful game. You know, it looks like it plays well, except for that Midway level that I was talking about. The multiplayer's tight. You know, it's got a nice variety to it. That being said, if you're like me, where you mainly want to stick with the single player, you may want to wait a sale for this one instead of hopping out or hopping into it. But that being said, like, Activision, if you're actually listening to my review, about 10 years ago, you guys put out a market survey asking if people would be willing to just pay for a single player campaign instead of for like $20-$30 instead of like the whole 60 shebang. I am still very much interested in that, and I wish you guys would do that. But overall, for $60, totally worth it. For $70 on the Xbox Series X, I can't even imagine how beautiful it looks. Those cutscenes were amazing. Like, it's gotta be even better on Xbox Series X. So yeah, I would definitely do the $10 upcharge if I had the system to do it for.
No. Cool. Well, next up, we got a hardware review for the Turtle Beach Recon 200 Gen 2, manufactured by Turtle Beach, released September 19th on the Turtle Beach website for $59.95. Powered by a rechargeable 12-hour battery, the Recon 200 Gen 2 multi-platform gaming headset delivers powerful, amplified audio and can keep going without power in passive mode. Whether you're chatting with teammates or trash-talking the enemy, the flip to mute mic picks up your comms loud and clear. Play for hours in comfort with the ultra-soft memory foam ear cushions equipped with ProSpecs glasses-friendly technology, which is important with headsets. But Serlina covered this one, and it should have been the first review, but she doesn't know how to send in her reviews by 9 o'clock, so they're later. Thanks, Serly. This is what she's got to say. Hello, SML friends and fam. It's your girl, Serlina, and I've got a different type of review for you. This time I'm reviewing a peripheral, a headset. That's right. I've got the opportunity to tell you about the Turtle Beach Recon 200 Generation 2 headset, so let's get to it. Funny story, I was lamenting the fact that my headset was dying on me. At seemingly random intervals, there was a lot of popping noises in my mic audio. Not a good look for someone who uses her vocal cords often on this here internet. So Joe Cam told me about the opportunity to review this headset, and here we are. What's really funny is that my previous headset is also a Turtle Beach, so I'm pretty well equipped to talk about the latest version. With the Gen 2, there's been a few noticeable changes from the previous headset. The first is the sound clarity. The headset has got bass boost built in, and when I first plugged it in, it was heard immediately. It's got 40mm speakers, and I was incredibly pleased at the crisp sounds being blasted into my ear holes. Another noticeable change is the cushions around the speakers. Instead of the leather-like material from the last headset, this time Turtle Beach has opted for cloth. This is good because I wear glasses when I game, and the cloth and foamy cushions accept and cradle the glasses' arm temples. Don't look at me, I had to Google what they were called. Much more effectively. In short, it doesn't feel like the glasses are digging into my skull. Another improvement is battery life. This bad boy will last 12 hours without needing to be recharged. Wonderful when I'm gaming and I forgot to plug it in overnight. Another really awesome feature is that in the event you do run out of juice, you can still use the headset. The sound will still work, but the amped up bass will turn off. It won't be super loud, but you'll still have sound, and that's better than nothing. Things that stayed the same were the adjustable metal reinforced headband. One thing I do want to note is that there's a little smooth cushion underneath that. As someone with naturally coily hair, I appreciate this, but can we get a headset that has a cushion going all the way around? I mean, I have hair all the way around on my head, not just at the top. Just saying, y'all might want to get on this. This is a wired headset, but you could plug it into anything you want. Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5 controllers, as well as your Switch. Hell, if you want to plug it into your phone, you can, provided that your phone accepts 3.5mm jacks. Naturally, you can also use this headset for your PC gaming needs as well. The flip mic is still there too, just remember to slide it all the way down to use it. A couple of things I didn't like. The headset is a tad bit on the heavy side. I can definitely feel the weight on my neck, which is an issue if you're trying to marathon game. Also, for some reason, when raising the mic to mute it, there's a very audible click. I don't know why. It's not like I can feel it sliding into place. It was odd because I could hear the click in the speakers, too. If one is streaming, can the audience hear the click? Are both of these needed? The Turtle Beach Recon 200 Gen 2 gaming headset is available right now for $59.95, and should you buy this one? Yeah, absolutely, I'd give this one a buy it. My gripes are few, and it's incredibly affordable price for a really good headset. You can most certainly do worse. Thank you, Surly. I am glad you enjoy your new headset, and I was watching her play last night on stream, and it sounded really fucking good. Like, it was super clear. So, Jacob, if you were looking for a new headset, that might be one to pick up.
Okay, cool.
Next game to talk about is The Smurfs Mission Vileaf, developed by Osum Studio, published by Microids, released November 16th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $39.99. In a dusty grimoire, the wizard Gargamel has just put his hands on the formula of an evil plant, the Vileaf. The plant produces vile trap seeds, which can attract and imprison Smurfs, but these vile trap plants are also a great danger for the forest, as they are toxic, especially for the sarsaparilla fields. Jacob, tell us about your time with the Smurfs.
So pretty much, it's just you start off as a Smurf and you notice that there is a contamination going around and like it's screwing up some of the grass in the village and like all these odd plants have shown up and these little like, I don't know, like ball like things. It's also corrupted some of the mushrooms in the area and you have to get this special backpack. Which will spray this like stuff all over the grass and help it get back to its natural colors and stuff like that, but also like, you know, helps you jet across like caverns and stuff like that, and you know, help propel you in the air. And if all this is sounding very familiar, it's because it's pretty much Mario Sunshine with some Smurf skin slapped on it. Which at first I was just like, oh, this is kind of like better. And then I got to playing it and I cared way less about whether or not it was a copy or not. And I was just enjoying it. It's a lot of fun. Like the gameplay, like it plays pretty well for a 3D platformer. The camera gets stuck occasionally, which, I mean, what 3D platformer doesn't have crappy camera angles at some point? Because it's not going to be perfect, but it's serviceable enough. Like, all the levels feel really well done. My only complaint with, you know, like, the different areas that you go to is that it eventually starts getting pretty hard going back to the hub world. You know, like, it's because then you just have to travel through multiple lands and go through multiple stuff, and it's just like, I don't feel like doing this, but just give me a quick transport, please. And that being said, so it's a lot of wash, rinse, repeat. Like, you just go into a new area, You find out one of the Smurfs has been trapped, like, and you have to, like, figure out how to, like, navigate through the whole area, you know, clean out as much of the contamination as you can, like, defeat the quote-unquote boss, which is really just like, oh, well, you have to clean up this plant, and this plant, and then, like, it'll free me from whatever. And you slowly get upgrades for your little backpack thing. And when I say slowly, I mean very slowly. And it's one of my gripes about the game is that it takes way too long to start introducing upgrades. And like, and I get that this game is for kids and they want to make sure that kids grasp the how everything works. But holy crap, guys, like this was this was a little too slow for how it should have been. That being said, like, it's just, it plays really well, and I was really caught off guard by how well this game does. Like, it looks really pretty, the environments are nice, the music is actually pretty serviceable for it. I was expecting, like, some generic, like, stuff that I'd eventually have to turn off through the menu, but as I was playing it, I ended up, like, kind of jamming out to some of the music. So kudos to the composer. But yeah, like essentially, this game is Super Mario Sunshine with Smurfs, and so if you like that kind of gameplay, all for it. It's one of the better. I would actually say it's. I mean, because Smurfs is generally considered to be a kid's property, I would actually say that this is the best kids-oriented game I've played all year.
Wow. Yeah, like, I know when we were offered the game, we were told explicitly, this is a kid's game, keep your expectations in check. And I don't need to keep any expectations in check. This is just a legitimately solid platformer.
Yeah, this is one I don't recommend sleeping on. Like, it's definitely something you should check out. And if you've been jonesing for some Mario Sunshine action on an Xbox console, this services it incredibly nicely.
A solid looking game too. Visually, it's really nice. And it's done by Osam Studio, who did the Asterix and Obelix games. And those are really solid platformers too. So,
yeah. Now I did notice one thing, and perhaps this is something that they'll eventually fix. I got a little crazy with, like, trying to, like, clean up as much of the contamination as I could. And one of the levels where you have to clean, like, one of two, or you have to clean two plants to free the Smurf. Somehow I managed to clean one of the plants before triggering the boss battle. And so the game wouldn't recognize that I had already cleaned off the one plant. It just kept acting like as if, oh, well, why? Why isn't this a thing? And so what I ended up having to do is just quitting the game, rebooting, and it started me back at the beginning of the boss, at the beginning of the level. I mean, all of my contamination was taken care of. However, it did reset the flowers. Mm. And so I was able to progress through the game. And now I'm currently stuck in another part of it because I'm trying to figure out a friggin' platforming area. And I kind of wish, like, Prime and Game Guides were still a thing, because I would have picked this up for... I think I would have picked one up for this game.
Of course you would.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I definitely recommend checking it out.
Cool. So for $40 on this one, what are your thoughts?
Absolutely. For $40, like, especially with other kids' games that I've reviewed for this show, as I said, this is by far the best kids' game that I've had to play this year, and it is definitely a solid $40 investment.
Cool. All right, switching gears, the next game is Bloodshore. That's significant difference from Smurfs.
Not that much, though. Not that much. I mean, they're both rated M for mature.
Smurfs are hardcore. Bloodshore, developed by Wales Interactive, Goodgate Media, Way Out Pictures, and Posterity Entertainment, published by Wales Interactive, released November 3rd on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $14.99. Bloodshore is an interactive action movie about a televised battle royale between high-profile streamers, entertainers, and death row inmates. You control the fate of Nick, a washed-up actor who fights for a life-changing cash prize. Jacob, tell us about Bloodshore.
So, I mean, it's pretty much as the description said, you are playing this washed up actor, and there's this game which is essentially like a Hunger Games battle royale mashup, and there's people from all walks of life, and as they said, most of them are streamers. Like, there's one guy who does like wilderness streams, like he, like, you know, he goes into the jungle and then comes back like a month later. There's like people who are aspiring Hollywood actresses or models. There's a bunch of game streamers. Like, so you're gonna meet like a varied cast of characters through the game. And it definitely tries to go for like the social commentary thing, which I don't know if you I mean, Battle Royale and the Hunger Games movies definitely went for social commentary. I don't know if you remember the was it Steve Austin that was in The Condemned?
Yes.
The WWE yep. movie. It goes over, like, the social commentary goes over just about as well as that movie, where it's just like, yeah, technically it's there, but it's going to get lost over just about everyone. And most of its audience. So pretty much like early on, you're on the plane and like you can like talk to other people and you can decide how the how you're going to respond to the conversations. You know, do you want to like work with this person? Do you want to work with any of the people? You know, and then you get on the island and you start talking. Like, it's essentially a lot of talking. And the nice thing about this game is that you can have your controller sitting on your leg, and you can control the action in this game with one hand while you're busy like eating chips and popcorn and all that other kind of stuff. It really is like an interactive movie. And the decisions are not that big. I mean, it's essentially like, how do you want to have how do you want to have this conversation? Do you want to respond angrily? Do you want to respond happily? Like, you know, or this time, do you want to respond thoughtfully? Do you want to do you want to say something nice and make them join their team or like join your team? Do you want to kill this person? Do you want to leave? But then like eventually it starts getting into that area. Like, do you want to kill this person? Do you want to leave them behind? Like, you know, to suffer their fate. Like, who do you want on your team? Cause one of them isn't going to make it. That kind of stuff. And it hits hard and heavy. Like, the acting is not, I mean, it's a B movie. It's a B movie. Like, let's just get this out of the way. This is not A-list stuff, but it's entertaining enough.
Which is that's all you need. You just need entertaining. You don't have to have Oscar-worthy performances in something like this.
Right, and it's not as heavy as a couple of the other Wales Interactive games that I've played. But this felt like a nice change of pace to go for. Like, as I said, like it's definitely not like a one-man army stuff, but the Battle Royale format was a nice change of pace for this. That being said, I did appreciate the fact that this is a game essentially you can just take a break from and like empty out your mind. And as long as you're paying attention to your choices and stuff like that, which, by the way, you eventually do have to like start like considering multiple things, because there are like four gauges that you have to consider. And it's like, crap. And I forget what exactly they're called. Like, one of them is like teamwork, like, or team morale, friendship, like it's like a friendship level or something like that. Likeability, like how much does the audience like what you're doing? That kind of stuff. Like, so there's four things that you have to keep in mind, and your choices will affect these. So now how much that affects tour like specific endings for this game, I don't know, but the game does obviously, you know, it make like the idea is that you're going to be playing this multiple times so you can see all the different ways that the game plays out, or the movie game. I don't know how you want to exactly, whatever, how it all plays out,
the experience.
And so that being said, I enjoyed it. It was chill, and you know, I like having an action, you know, movie that I don't have to think too much about, and where the only thing I really had to think about is which choice do I want to make, like every like 3 minutes or so. So,
and when you think about it, it's cheaper than most movies these days. It's only $15 bucks, and a new movie is like 30.
20 minimum. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah,
this one, so for $14.99, what are your thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been a fan of Wales releases, and this one was no different. For $15, I definitely recommend it. Like, I'm glad that, you know, somebody has finally made a game company has finally made a living off of like the full motion video games that, you know, back in the 90s we thought were really going to be a thing, like that thing that blended Hollywood and video games. But for the most part, most of those studios failed at what they were doing. And I'm really glad that Wales is able to keep this going, and make it successful. So not only like for $50 would I say this is a good game, but I want this kind of genre to keep getting the support and love. So absolutely all around, definitely worth it.
Cool. Sounds good. All right, next up is The Gardener and the Wild Vines, developed and published by Finite Reflection Studios, released November 5th on Xbox One and Switch for $9.99. Travel from tower to tower in search of the missing prince, braving unique environmental hazards through visually stunning and diverse locations. Follow the gardener in the night as they quest to rescue the prince in this fairy tale that explores love and all the pain and risks that come with it. Serlina wrote in a review for this one, and this is what she's got to say. Hello, my SML lovelies. It's Serlina, and I'm reviewing The Gardener and the Wild Vines for the Xbox One. This puzzle platformer features the gardener who must use his shears, flowers, and vines to climb to the ever-increasing towers to rescue the prince. Let's get to the review. This game was quite surprising for me, some in obvious ways, others in fairly subtle ways. The story in this game starts off in familiar territory. Your character, the gardener, is climbing to the towers to rescue the prince, who suddenly disappeared, a standard plot point. What you quickly find out is the gardener is actually in love with the prince and was the reason for the prince being locked up, sort of, because he inspired the prince to rebel against his father, the king. Yeah, the game unabashedly deals with same-sex love, which is great. We also have gender-challenging roles in the form of the knight, a woman who is tasked with protecting these towers. She also goes through a pretty intense test of her character early in the game as well, and it's lovely to behold. Plus, there's pronouns. The game doesn't beat us over the head with pronouns, but it's consistent, which I appreciate. We also get some dialogue about the ruling class, and I'm just like, yes, inject this into my veins. It's a welcome surprise. Let's talk about the gameplay. This is a puzzle platforming game, so lots of jumping involved with the puzzle solving. The way it works is that as the gardener, you must use your shears to clip the flowers, which create vines to snake up the tower. The vines will have leaves that you can jump on to create a path for yourself to reach the peak of the tower. It's not a difficult undertaking, but it's a solid challenge. There's dead-end vines, obstacles in the form of electric orbs, crabs, and even the layout of the towers themselves. You get 3 hearts in case those orbs and crabs get a little feisty, but I didn't find that getting your health back was a terrible ordeal. What did make me pay attention was collecting the lovebirds that look more like parrots than lovebirds. There's 3 ways to obtain the birds. You'll merely find them, collect yellow stars to unlock them, or reach them in a certain time, which I believe is 300 seconds. I absolutely hate the timed birdies because once you find them, the game will let you know exactly how many seconds you're over in getting them. It's a bit of a slap in the face. Yeah, I hate the timed ones too. I fucking hate timed stuff. Graphically, the game is quite good looking. I do appreciate the retro look, but each of the areas is vastly different from each other, which I like as well. What this means is that you get treated to some really awesome backgrounds as you climb higher and higher. The music in the game is also really catchy. I was bouncing and bopping along with the soundtrack. It did help me with getting the rhythm down of snipping them vines. The Gardener and the Wild Vines is available for $9.99, and should you buy it, yeah, this one is a buy it for me. This is a super solid puzzle platform with 28 levels of tower goodness, as well as a challenge mode, which really ramps up the difficulty and enjoyment of the game. It's also really nice to see these newer social norms presented in a way that makes it seem like it's old hat. More games like this for Surly, please. Yeah, I like this one. The timed ones. I will never like timed events in games. They annoy me.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of them myself.
Next up is Flowers by Paugi, developed and published by Lightwood Games, released October 26th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $7.99. This unique anagram puzzle is a bunch of fun. Plant letters on the petals to grow words through the middle of the flower. Jacob, tell us about your time with Flowers by Paugi.
So, thankfully, I had a much easier time with this game than the last Paugi game that I played, because that one was just tossing random letters and hoping for the best. This one, so the whole puzzle is set up like a flower, and in the center of it are 2 letters, and you have to put a combination of 2 other letters before and after it to make up a word. So, let's say that, let's say you have AF in the middle of it. And so you find like the letter portion SN and US, and now you have snafus like in the middle of it. Like, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No? Okay, cool.
Yeah, looking so at a screenshot for this game, it does wonders for explaining what this game is. Like, trying to explain this in text is very hard, or explain it talking to someone is very, but once you see a picture, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And thankfully, like, the game is, it's deceptively simple, and addictive. And I've ended up clearing out, like, you know, I mean, because if you want to be an achievement whore about it, like, you really only need to complete, I think, like, 30 of the puzzles in the game, like, tops. And I've ended up blowing through at least 60 of them. And this ended up becoming, like, my go-to relaxation game during, like, while playing all the other games for review. And it's just, you know, it's simple, like, it's fun, like, and you end up spending, like, the worst you're ever going to have to do is eventually get a word on Scrambler, like, when you search on Bing or Google or something like that, and then just, like, slam in all the letters to, like, try to figure out what other six-letter word could possibly fit in here. there were a couple of instances where I had to do that because it was such, like, an obscure word that I couldn't figure out what the heck the word possibly could have been. And then, like, once you get that obscure word, you're like, okay, like, everything else just falls into place. And so, like, as I said, like, it doesn't seem like a particularly complex game, but I just found it very addictive and relaxing. And I tried seeing, like, how quickly I could kill a puzzle. Like, there were some of them I was able to do in just under 40 seconds. Others would take me like 3 to 5 minutes. Like, the worst was one that took like 9 minutes to get done.
Good.
The puzzles. Yeah. Right. That was one of the ones where, as I said, it was like some really obscure word that I couldn't even tell you what the heck it was, at this point. Cause I just don't remember. Now the puzzles do get progressively harder as you go along with the game, and the words get longer. So you have more possibilities of like messing up and just having to figure out everything. But thankfully that's really not until like the end of the game. So, the game builds up its difficulty. But yeah, as I said, it's relaxing. It's fun. I really recommend checking it out.
Cool. It's $8. What do you say?
Cheap ass Jacob would have been more like along the lines of like $5.
But shut up! Me, it's cheap. It's $8. Shut the fuck up.
Shut up! You're cheap. If for $8, yeah, I'm okay with it.
Jacob, it's $8.
I'd rather have it be $5. No, I do recommend it, and even at the $8 price tag, I still think it's very much worth your time and money. As I said, it's a nice break for when things get, you know, when you're getting shot too many times in Call of Duty, or like you can't figure out that next platforming area of the Smurfs. Like, sometimes it's just great to take a break with this game. There weren't as many like terrible puns and jokes from Mr. Paugi, unfortunately, but I'll let it slide.
Oh, well. Anyway, we got one final game to talk about tonight, and we got to get Dark Mika in here, Aki, to talk about this one. Let's call her up and get her added to the call and hope it goes through.
She's good enough to...
Just to do the one, yeah.
Oh, okay. Wait, are we both talking about it? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if it was like another game or something, so...
No, it's Cyanide and Happiness. There she is!
There she is, Miss America.
How are you today, Aki?
Pretty good, I guess. Not feeling great, but I'm alive.
If you're not feeling great, then how are you pretty good?
Because feeling like crap isn't the worst thing in the world. I could be dead.
True.
There you go.
Very so pretty true. Good,
all things considered.
So do you want to talk about why you're not feeling good, or do you just want to get to the review?
Sure. I ate some Reese's that weren't good. I don't know. Which is a really weird thing that I never thought I would ever say in my entire fucking life.
Laid up by peanut butter cups.
Yeah, but I got some peanut butter bars, and I bit into them, and the inside, instead of being brown like peanut butter is, it was all gray, and it tasted wrong.
What was the year on those candies?
Oh, I literally just bought them.
From where?
That doesn't answer the question.
Kroger. I have no idea what the date was on them, but they buy them on a regular basis. So
I would go back to Kroger and be like,
No, I have a coupon coming in from Reese's themselves.
A coupon?
Yeah.
I vote that you still return them and get your money back.
Would they accept already opened candy?
If it's gray?
Yeah. Yes. Like, as long as you still have the receipt, yeah, the grocery store will still accept a return on it.
Especially if it's gray peanut butter.
Yeah. I mean, Joe and I used to work at a grocery store. We would know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I don't know. Joe, did you ever ring up as a cashier, or were you just a stock boy?
It was both.
Oh. Huh. I never knew that.
Yeah. I didn't do cashier often, but I knew how.
Yeah. And then today I burnt my dinner. So that wasn't fun.
Son of a... It's just a fucking day for you, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Today has not been a particularly good day, but things are moving. It won't be this day much fucking longer, and hopefully it'll get better.
True. Well, it won't be the show for much longer because we just got one review left to go. Let's get to it. Final game to talk about tonight is Cyanide and Happiness Freakpocalypse Episode 1, developed by Explosum and Skeleton Crew Studios, published by Serenity Forge, released October 26th on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99. You play as Coop, go away weirdo McCarthy, and all you want to do is make the world a better place. The trouble is, nobody likes you, school sucks, and you can't find a prom date. Everybody bullies you, including your teachers, and your attempts to help only makes things worse. Will you escape high school alive? Who will love you? Do you even deserve love? Why is this game called Freakpocalypse? All those questions and more. Aki, tell us about Freakpocalypse.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck this kid did, but Jesus Christ, when they say no one likes him, they aren't kidding. Like, the very first thing that happens in the game is the teacher sits and berates you and talks shit about you openly. Two kids say that you're trying to harass them and cheating off of them when one of them's sitting behind you, so you can't cheat off of him, and the other's on the other side of the fucking room saying you're sexually harassing him, so... The teacher sends you to the principal's office, and you're like, but I didn't do anything. He's like, fuck you, you're going, you stupid little piece of shit. It's like, that is the start of the game, and it does not get any better for him. So it's a point and click. And you can help people if you really want to. The real thing that you're trying to do is... To get the only student in the school who doesn't treat you like the garbage that you apparently really, really are, you're trying to get her to go to prom with you. That's really what the game boils down to, trying to get this girl to go to prom with you, because she's awesome. And along the way, you can help other people in the school. They say... that you only make things worse, but I haven't really seen things being made particularly any worse. You know, you convince two bullies that beat the shit out of each other on a regular basis, you can convince them to make out with each other instead. I see this as a net positive. They're no longer hitting each other.
They're hitting on each other.
Exactly. You can get a girl her love letter signed by the guy she sent it to saying, yes, I'll go to prom with you. That's a net positive. You just had to make him extremely sick in order to get him to do that. That's all. It's still a net positive, kind of. That was a little harder to justify, but it's still a net positive-ish. I mean, he was already sick. You just made him a little more sick. It's fine. It's fine.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's bad. And throughout the entire game, you can ask a lot of people to go to prom with you, all of which will fucking reject your ass. thing is, you don't even just stop at fucking the other damn students. You, like, you're asking the lunch lady, you're asking the janitor, you're asking your BDSM guy who also happens to be your professor, who has weird stuff hidden in weird places throughout the school. It's weird. I don't trust that guy. And, like, you're just asking all these people. I think you even asked the principal, I think. Well, I think you can, anyways. It's like, and all of them are like, nah, fuck that, no. Most of them won't even fucking hear you out.
Oh, Jesus.
It's fucking fantastic. And then, obviously, like every other point and click, you click on something and you can look at it, you can touch it, or you can talk to it. This game takes that a bit further. You can literally look at it, damn near everything. You can try to touch everything and you can talk to everything. And he starts talking to all of it. Sometimes you have him talking to inanimate objects and he'll just be like, why the fuck am I talking to inanimate objects? And why the fuck am I asking you? And he's all of, I think he said 4'3". So you can click on things that are too tall that he can't, and tell him to grab them or to touch them. And he's like, you know I can't reach that, and you're a bad person.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic.
Jacob, tell us about your time with this game, because you played it too, right?
Yeah, I did. And unfortunately, I didn't enjoy it as much as Aki did. I've played my share of point-and-click adventure games, and while I do appreciate that they went for the fact that, you know, we're all so trained to click on everything, like, for me, a lot of the jokes were starting to fall flat real quick, because it, like, you know, you're clicking on everything and you're like trying to touch it, you're trying to view it, you're trying, you know, you're just trying to interact with it in all the different ways, and it's just the one-liners just start all becoming the same exact thing. And in my opinion, I felt the game moved too slow for its own good. Towards the end of it, like, we finally start getting towards the main meat of the story. So, you know, hopefully we're eventually going to get parts 2 and 3 for this. Like, hopefully this sells well enough that we are going to... I mean, is there a part 2 already? Or have they just been releasing it on PC and consoles at this point? Like, part 1?
I'm not too sure.
Okay. You know, so hopefully we will get, like, a part 2 to this so we can see, like, you know, if it's going to get any better.
Yeah, so far there's no episode 2, it's just episode 1.
Okay. Although, I mean, that, I feel like that would be par for the course of Cyanide and Happiness being like, oh, you wanted a part 2? Too bad.
I kind of expect them to release 1 and then release a 4. And
go right to 4.
It's like the epilogue is like, oh boy, wasn't that quite the thing?
I could totally see that being the opening joke even. Oh,
yeah. I don't know. It's just like some, like, a lot of the situations were funny. But I just, as I said, a lot, like, I enjoy the Cyanide and Happiness comic strip, but it's just, it felt like it was repeating itself too quickly. The action moved too damn slowly for it. All in the name of, like, padding out everything. And it's just, I don't know. I feel like this would have been a better experience on PC as opposed to Xbox. My other thing that I didn't so much like about this, and this is an issue with porting games that are obviously meant for PC over to consoles, is that especially stuff that is text heavy, like, you know, Cyanide and Happiness, there's no, like, there's barely any real accessibility options for it, like, from reading, like, text to screen, or even making things bigger, yeah, so I could read it, because one of the scenes has you having to change your school record, so then, you know, then you're able to go to the prom and stuff like that, and, like, it's filled with all of these, like, funny one-liners of it, but I had to, like, get up off the couch and walk up to my TV screen just so I could read it, and it's just, like, if... you know, if you're gonna like make all these like little cute in jokes and like, you know, like little quips that like otherwise you might not get, especially for a point and click adventure game that is heavy on text, you need some sort of like magnification option for it. And it, for me, it was disappointing that there was nothing of that kind of nature. So, my recommendation for this game, if we're about to get into that section of the review, my recommendation is to get it on PC where the monitor's like right in front of you. I don't think it translated nearly as well to Xbox.
Aki, what do you think?
I play the game on the Xbox, and I have my TV screen literally less than a foot away from me. So I don't know what is normal for TVs and people to sit at them. I only know what's normal for me. And I would have liked there to be some size changes for the texts, because they are fairly small, even on a 42-inch TV a foot in front of me. I don't think the controls were that bad. I thought they were perfectly fine. I think that the only real issue with the controls is when you're in conversations and you're trying to go through them, the only button that will go through them is the fucking A button. Guess what also chooses to go into a goddamn conversation point? The fucking A button. And it's not, there isn't like a period where it's like, okay, you cannot put input A for like a second or two because you'll automatically click this. I went through the same fucking dialogue choice like 8 or 9 times.
That happened a couple of times to me too.
Yeah, because, you know, you'd be flipping through, just skipping what the fuckers were saying, and then they'd have something that was being said, and you'd click A, but it wasn't actually being said for some reason, so you didn't have to click A, so it automatically choose the option to go into the conversation, and it just keep repeating that, which drove me nuts. And there was a point right near the beginning of the game that did that, and I hated it. It took me forever to get out of that cycle, because I was just like, I just want to get out of this, out of this. And it just put me right back in it. So I think it's good. I totally suggest this if you like the Sad Happiness comics. In its defense, whilst Jacob said it,
whilst nobody uses that word.
Go back, she just did. Shut the fuck up.
I use it on a regular basis, actually. Hey, I can be fancy too, motherfucker. I can put my feet. Yeah.
Whoops uses that word.
Whoops thou used. use it.
Whilst this douche canoe says that the game's too long and slow, the game can be completed in under 30 minutes. So I don't think it's at any point is it particularly too long. If you're like, oh, these jokes are starting to get boring, stop clicking on the same fucking item.
Yeah, Jacob, fuck you.
Yeah, like in
stop clicking on every item in the room and speedrun that bitch, fucker.
Well, it's not even just that. Like, in every area, you can click on a clock, and he might have something different to say about it. But in lots of them, he's going to end up saying the same fucking thing, and it gets repetitive very quickly because of that, because the game still says, oh, you can click this because this is a new clock in a new room, and it might have something new to say. But it might not.
Yeah, or it may be like what you needed for that specific, like for a specific puzzle. Like, yeah. I've been playing point and click since the 90s. I'm not taking any fucking chances. Like, I played too many where it's just like, oh well, because you didn't click on the third rock, like, you know, you can't complete this puzzle and you need to restart. Shut up. Like, yeah, fuck you, gamer.
It isn't like you don't have to worry about that stupidity. If you need to get something, it's kind of obvious. Like, there's a kid, you need to get him to sign something. He's sick, he says he may have eaten it. He wouldn't know. Well, you got to make him vomit. And he only eats one item. Oh, how are you going to make him vomit? You go buy that item, and then you feed it to him, and then he vomits it up. Just that simple. None of them are particularly complicated, so you don't have to click on everything. If it doesn't seem like this is obviously going to help you solve something, it probably isn't going to, thankfully, in this one, because I hate when they're like, oh yeah, give this monkey a wrench and it turns into a monkey wrench. That shit's stupid and I hate it. It doesn't make any fucking sense. It's not realistic in any conceivable way and I hate it.
All right, well, I need final verdicts on this one. For $20, what do the two of you think?
Pick it up on a sale.
Pick it up on a mega sale. Or PC.
Hold
on. Let me rephrase that. If you're picking it up on Xbox, I would go for wait till it's really on sale, like 80% or so. If you're going on PC, I think it would do a lot better. Or if you're going to be like Aki and have your screen like a foot to your face, which was really weird when I put it that way. I don't mean like an actual like foot. I mean like a measurement foot. Anyway. Yeah, because it's just like if your TV is like 8 to 10 feet away, like you can go get Ben. So,
well, my TV is like 8 feet away, and I read it fine. So eat my butt.
Well, you know what, Joe? You can go get Ben. Like I
will.
Good.
I will.
Do.
Best part is that's the end of the episode. So fuck you. No, music. Let's see. I don't know. We'll play something. Does anyone have any final words to end the episode?
Fart. Piss.
Fart, really?
Fuck.
God damn it. You two are terrible. I guess we should thank Glenn for being here. Thanks, Glenn. You were awesome.
Oh, yeah. Glenn got you bits, so yeah, we have to thank Glenn.
Yeah, Glenn dropped 100 bitties. So thanks, Glenn. How about we give George the final words?
Wet pancakes!
I agree.